The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, and this is sure to be an emotional episode of the pod as we present the first of this season's J2 specials with our old favourites, Stuart Smith and John Steele. Firstly, Stuart, welcome back to the pod. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very excited. You've caught me on a rare positive day because Gifu won yesterday and it's all roses and smiles and we're here to talk about it. So, yeah, let's get it started.
Outstanding. And, John, welcome back to your good self as well. How are things?
Hi, Ben. Hi, everyone. Yeah, thanks for having me back. Yeah, everything's good, I think. Been enjoying the football. 1 month into J2 and six games down, so plenty to talk about, and of course, no balls have been sandpapered or otherwise tampered with on this show.
And yes, I think that'll be the end of the cricket references. Very embarrassing time for me and all Australians. So yes, we might draw a line under that, John. Thanks very much for that mention.
No problem.
right off the bat. Actually, do you guys need to catch up at all? It's obviously been a long time between drinks on the podcast, but I imagine you've been in touch in recent times to talk about different things, but yes, it's great to have you both back on the podcast together for the first time in goodness knows how long, 15 months, 16 months or something?
Is that what it is?
Well, I remember the last time you were on at the end of 2016, Stuart, you guys were on together. You did a section of the season-ending pod, just the two of you. I wasn't involved, so that was the last time you were on, so it would have been a couple of weeks before that, perhaps.
Well, that does seem a long time ago, but yeah, we're in constant communication. I mean, I've got a back channel to the J2 Canto Bites bunker. There's an emergency phone whenever some J2 news goes down. So
yeah, goalkeeping howler, horrible away kit,
bad pitches, kids. Only emergencies, yeah.
Well, it is terrific to have the band back together. And, yes, so both of you making your second appearances of the pod on its return. So, yes, great to have you both on again and, especially together. As John mentioned, we are six games into the 2018 J2 season. And while it's obviously too early to jump to too many conclusions, we will probably do just that throughout this episode. Let's get going with a couple of surprising and disappointing teams from each of you through six games. So, yeah, I asked before we started recording, I asked John and Stuart to each pick one team, sorry, not a couple each, one surprising team through six games for positive reasons and one who you're slightly disappointed with so far. So, John, why don't you lead us off? Who's been a positive surprise for you through six games?
I think the one I have to mention is Mito Hollyhock, principally because I tipped them to be one of the relegation strugglers this season. I thought they'd have a hard time scoring goals, but they currently sit quite proudly in third place. They've scored nine in the first six matches. That's more than Fagiano Okayama, another surprise who are in first place. Jefferson Baiano, the dubious Brazilian forward, in my opinion, in pre-season, hit the ground running and is scoring goals. And they already have 2-3-0 home wins from the first month of the season. So they don't look like they, not many teams who end up in relegation danger have a first six games like that. So I've got egg firmly on my face with that one.
Yeah, it's been an amazing start. And Stuart, I don't think any of us would have seen that coming.
No, and not in the slightest. I think John was well within his rights to pick them as a relegation struggler this year, but they had a good win on opening weekend against Montelio Yamagata, and obviously the confidence has flowed from there. And they're playing some decent stuff, actually. And it's good, it's good to see a couple of new teams, or two or three new teams up at the top of the table, even though, we're only six games in, but it's good to see.
All right, so sticking with John, a disappointing team, a team that hasn't lived up to expectations so far, or however you want to define it, John, through six games.
Yeah, we were just chatting about this in the green room pre-show, and I think there are quite a few underwhelming teams who we expected to do a bit better, so it's difficult to pick just one. But in the interest of Steve Ballmer, I thought I'd go for Omiya, because they were the team that I thought would be by far the strongest of the three relegated teams, and not necessarily would be blowing teams away left and right, but they're in 13th, aren't they, at the moment after six games, mm-hmm. With a negative goal difference. I feel a bit sorry picking them, because they've just beaten Fukuoka, obviously, with two excellent goals. We might come on to that later, but yeah, I just think only two wins and a draw from the first six games. Yeah, and I think a few murmurings. It was very important that they won that game against Fukuoka, I think, on Sunday, because I've already seen a few sort of murmurings that maybe they weren't happy. You know, people weren't too happy with the manager, you know, despite his pedigree. And yeah, I just thought, I don't know, I thought they'd be in the top four or top six already, but they might be slow starters. I don't know.
All right, so Stuart, this might actually, before we get to your two teams, this might lead us nicely into a brief chat about the three teams who were relegated from J1 at the end of the 2017 season. So John's mentioned Omiya there as his disappointment, and fair enough too, 13th, as he mentioned, through six games, although they have a little bit of form in this regard. The last time they were down in the second tier, of course, they returned to J1 at the first attempt as champions. They were seventh after six games in 2015, so, well, I wouldn't say notorious slow starters. They've only had to do it twice in the last 10 or 12 years or so, but yes, they have previous in that regard. I'm sure there won't be too much panic at the NAC 5, but yeah, the other, well, obviously you can feel free to comment on Omiya as well if you like, but the other two relegated sides, Niigata and Kofu, both have certainly not pulled up any trees either, but Niigata far more comfortable of the pair of those up in sixth, while Kofu struggle with three losses as the same number as Omiya have, all the way down in 18th.
Yeah, well, Kofu, I think, I'm looking at the table now. I think they're the lowest scorers in the league. I think they've only scored three goals this year. And, like, it's fair enough them being, I don't want to say boring, but, like,
you can certainly say that about Kofu.
I will say they're boring. Like, it's fair enough being boring in J1, but to start the season off with just three goals in the first six J2 games, that's a really disturbing, statistic if you follow Kofu. And, you know, along with Niigata, like, I wasn't really too kind of confident about either of those teams' chance of kind of getting straight back up to J1. It's not like this year any of the teams that have come down, with all due respect to all of them, they're not kind of a Gamba, they're not like a Hiroshima, they're not I could say Nagoya, you know, those the cash rich teams that kind of automatically installed as favorites to go straight back up. I think John's right in saying that Omiya have kind of disappointed a bit so far. I think even to a certain extent Niigata have. I mean, I know they had a really good win at Yokohama FC a couple of weeks ago, but they went after that game, they went and lost at home to Ehime. And I know they got back on track with a narrow win against Tokushima last weekend, but I think they found it quite difficult as well. And I think it makes the league a little bit more open. And I think that ultimately it will be good for the league, but it'll be a lot more bunched than it has been in the past few years. And so, but I think the headline is that it's the relegated teams are not looking kind of as if they're going to kind of take the league by storm. And so, especially Kofu, they need to get their stuff together pretty soon, I would say.
Yeah, fair enough. John, anything to add there on either Niigata or Kofu before we throw to Stuart's surprising and slash disappointing teams?
No, I think Stuart covered the main points very eloquently there. I would say about Kofu, that of the three goals they have scored, one of them was a penalty at Omiya in round one, which they actually missed, and then the referee ordered a retake because of the goalkeeper had fractured the result. So they've only scored two from open play. And yeah, Niigata have scored seven, but three of those were in one game at Yokohama, so only four goals in the other five games. Yeah, they won't be able to push, you know, higher up the table if they can't resolve the goal scoring issues in particular.
All right then. So yeah, let's throw it back to Stuart. So through six games, so which obviously with Mito being off the board taken by John, Stuart, which team has surprised you the most, or been the most pleasant surprise so far?
So it's good that we were talking about goals, because my surprise team is Renofa Yamaguchi, who are currently the top scorers in the league. They've scored 14 goals in their first six games. Their attacking brand of football has been quite surprising this year. I think, personally, I had them as if they were going to be down towards if not at the bottom, then kind of looking downwards as opposed to kind of looking upwards. But they've opened the season playing some really, really attractive football. And the kind of movement up front is really good for J2. I mean, they've been playing with Ado Onaiwu up front, who from his kind of Jeff days and latterly Urawa, I think he's on loan at Yamaguchi from Urawa. He seems to have kind of leaned out a little bit. He's kind of trimmed off a little bit of the... he wasn't fat before by any stretch of the imagination, but he looks really kind of trim and mean now, and he's getting into good positions. And he's assisted by Daisuke Takagi on one side, and he's also assisted by Onose on the other side, and they've got a veritable smorgasbord of supply lines to go through. And if you score goals in this league, you're going to be kind of up and about the playoff places. I think it's still a bit early for them to kind of be dreaming about finishing in the top six, because while they have scored 14, they've conceded 10 as well. So, I mean, you're going to get your money's worth if you watch Renofa Yamaguchi these days. But they'll be my, as it stands now, they're playing some really nice football, and they're really good to watch. They're playing in exciting games. They seem to be getting a little bit of buzz about them. John was saying that they had the J-League time crew down there a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, or whatever. And, they seem to be doing really well. And it's good to see.
Terrific stuff. All right, so Yamaguchi, the top scorers in J2 through six games, as Stuart mentioned. And, I think there's a fairly obvious candidate for a most disappointing side so far. Stuart, are you going to plump for those as yours? I'll throw it back to you for that.
Yeah, so we were just talking about Renofa Yamaguchi there, and their latest result was a 2-2 home draw against my most disappointing team, Matsumoto Yamaga. Before the season, I think I was kind of really positive about Matsumoto's chances. I knew they would have a tough start, just because they were playing away from home, and even playing home games away from home because of the inclement weather this winter in Matsumoto. But I didn't expect them to be winless after six games. They've drawn four and lost two of their first six games, and they were 2-0 up at Yamaguchi going into additional time at the end of the second half, and they conceded two goals after the 90th minute to draw 2-2. And it's a little bit symptomatic of the way their season's gone so far. They haven't clicked into gear. They haven't seemed to be able to fit all of their undoubtedly good kind of separate parts into a functioning whole, really. They brought in Ryo Nagai from Nagoya in the off-season. They brought back Daisen Maeda from Mito Hollyhock, and they've got Naoki Maeda, they've got Hiroyuki Takasaki, Paulinho, Serginho. They've got loads of good players there, but it just, for whatever reason, it just hasn't kind of... they just haven't clicked so far this year, and they're back at home. They're back at their home this weekend for the first time this season. So, and I think that's it's a pretty important game. I think they're taking on Olmia this weekend, so it's like a disappointing derby, if we can coin that phrase. But yeah, considering the high hopes that I had for them before the season, Matsumoto are the ones that are really kind of leaving a sour taste in my G2 mouth at the moment. So yeah, I know it's obvious, but I think it's well worth pointing that out.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so I would agree with Stuart, yeah, that Matsumoto are obviously the standout candidates to be the most disappointing side. John, you could point to the difficult nature of their schedule, as you mentioned before we started recording, and Stuart mentioned as well. Yeah, they have not played a home match yet. And as you look at the table at the moment, everybody who they've played is currently inside the top six, which sounds difficult. But then you look at the table at the end of last season and you realise that, well, Sean Goldbraith said that the J1 table was upside down in last week's podcast with Hiroshima, Shimizu and Sendai all in the top four at the moment. But, I mean, look at this top six. In J2, I mean, Okayama lead the way. They finished 13th last season. Machida are second. They finished 16th. Mito third. They finished 14th last year. And Yamaguchi, Stewart's surprising team, and fair enough too, this season, finished third from bottom in 20th. And then you have Oita, who actually did finish in the top half last season, who are currently fifth, and Niigata, who are relegated from J1, are sixth. But this table is upside down. So, I mean, Matsumoto, yes, they've played... they've played six teams who are currently in the top eight of the table, but those teams weren't in the top eight of the table. They weren't that good last season. So, yeah, this has to go down as a massively disappointing start to the season. It is even an understatement, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the stats there about having played, you know, so many away games, and even the one scheduled game they had at home, I think, was moved to Kofu's stadium, wasn't it, Chugin? So at least the Kofu locals could see some exciting football this season. But yeah, I think if I was the coach, Yasuhiro Sorimachi, I would be trying to accentuate the narrative that they have had a tough start. And I think it's fair, you know, you don't want to play so many away games. But when I looked at the team and the manager in particular, I mean, Stuart mentioned, yeah, there's a good squad. We know that Sorimachi is a good manager, but I think he's in his seventh year there now. And when I look at the player profiles in the players guide, it's a lot of the same faces that I recognise from previous seasons in J2 and the campaign they had in J1. So, yeah, I just think maybe, I'm not sure if anybody's doing anything wrong or there's a problem in the dressing room or anything like that, but I just think maybe there's just maybe not enough turnover of players, or maybe even on the coaching side. I'd be tempted... basically, Sorimachi's got to get results when the home games do start coming, starting with this Sunday, as Stuart mentioned. I think it's a much more important game for Matsumoto than it is for Omiya, because Omiya have just won, the big game against Fukuoka in the last round. But yeah, I'd be tempted. They do say that kind of owners and the board of directors at clubs are too impatient these days. But I think if you've been in the job for 7 years. I'm a bit surprised that they didn't maybe make a change in the winter break and maybe just bring in a new manager with some fresh ideas, because if you measure it, I think they were relegated in 2016 from J1, and they didn't make the playoffs last year, and they're not looking too clever this season. You might be looking at, but by what their standards, will be three consecutive failures. I know there's many managers in professional football that can talk their way out of three years of disappointment on the spin. So we'll see.
And they did, I mentioned before, Omiya have an experience of starting slowly in J2 and doing well by the season's end. Well, Matsumoto also have the same in that regard. After 6 games of the 2016 season, they were 16th in the table and ended up 3rd. So all is certainly not lost, and it certainly is the definition of a marathon, not a sprint, J2, of course. But yes, a very sluggish start for Matsumoto, and there's no doubt, yes, that the questions about Mr. Sorimachi will have to surface, especially if they don't get their act in gear pretty sharpish. And yes, a win in their home opener against Omiya this coming Sunday would be a great way to get their season up and running. They also host in the game after that, they play Sanuki, so that's you would hope would be a home banker. There would be serious doubts over Mr. Sorimachi's position if they weren't to win that, and then a visit to Kofu, where they've already played this season, so they'll be familiar with the Yamanashi Bank Stadium surrounds. Okay, so I've already kind of spilt the beans on the top six there, Stuart, but the table is most definitely upside down, especially the top four. All the teams currently sitting in the top four finished 13th or worst last season. We've mentioned Mito and Yamaguchi, who currently sit 3rd and 4th respectively. So how about a brief word about Okayama and Machida? I'm obviously looking forward to speaking to either Aylan or Dave about Machida in the coming weeks. But Okayama sitting at top of the pile, and Machida 2nd. And both have got some really good results under their belt, so they're certainly not in false positions after 6 games, are they?
No, they're not. I'll leave John to talk about Machida because it's in his Kanto remit, I think. Okayama, they've been hyper organized. They've only conceded kind of 1 goal this year, and they're not super sexy going forward. They've got Lee Yong-jae up front sometimes, Shingo Akamine as well, Kota Ueda. He's playing really well in midfield. But, yeah, it's the defence that is the bedrock of that side. And, so far they've done really well. Like, I don't think anyone kind of expected them to pick up 16 points from their first possible 18. I think I was thinking about this earlier today, and I was trying to think of the best way to describe it. Like, in J2, there's a lot of kind of eccentric stuff that goes on, right? Like, there's kind of 6-1 wins at home, and then there's 5-0 away wins and stuff like that. But Fajiano Okayama this year seems to have got some kind of, stability. And it doesn't sound like an exciting word, stability. But I think for Okayama, they've got that stability, and what that allows them to do, it allows them to have a certain level of kind of performance. And if you know that roughly you're not really going to concede that easily, it puts a lot of pressure on the opposition, and it gives your kind of midfielders and attackers a little bit more confidence up front as well. And I think that, given the amount of randomness or kind of crazy events and 60-yard free kicks and those kind of things, which seem to happen in J2 quite often, the fact that Okayama have been quite stable so far has really worked in their favour. And while it's not exciting, it's definitely a great platform for them to build on. Whether it's good enough to keep them up there for the remainder of the year, I'm still a bit sceptical, but yeah, so far it's been really good for them.
All right, John. And so, to Machida, Zelvia, they announced themselves as real players this season in just the second round. Of course, they defeated relegated Omiya 3-2 at their Nozota Stadium, and then they followed that up with a 0-0 draw against Kofu. So they played 2 difficult games in the first 3. And, got through those unscathed. And, yes, they find themselves 2nd after 6 games. And, it's everything looking pretty rosy at Nozota at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think at the start of the season, I don't know if I was uncomplimentary about Machida. I think that would be a bit strong, but I wasn't enthused by their playoff chances, mainly because I just think Naoki Soma in a similar vein to Matsumoto's, probably just outstayed his, he's perhaps past his natural lifespan as coach, not his natural lifespan, full stop, as I think it's time would have been time for a change. But, the results so far say different, don't they? I think if you'd offered them, from the first three home games, 7 points from Omiya, Kofu and Matsumoto, they would have taken that. And I was a bit worried with Koji Suzuki, the forward who I love to watch. He has quite a lot of injury problems. He's been missing, so I didn't know if they'd score many, but they've done well with 10 goals so far. Hiroki Todaka has been doing well up front for them, as far as I can see. I've been impressed, and they're playing away at Mito on Sunday, so that's a very it's an unlikely third versus second clash, but that's what we've got. So it'll be very interesting to see how they deal with that game. I think Stuart mentioned the organisation, and certainly in terms of the back line, that is something that you do get with Naoki Soma. I think most of the criticism that Dave and Aileen had, or other Matsuda fans, is perhaps the rest, the pitch going forward, they're perhaps not always as effective. But they're definitely a very good unit. And this season, as Stuart's mentioned earlier, it could be the year, because there's no outstanding team. There's no juggernaut, I don't think, out of the 22 teams. It could be a chance, if they can stay consistent, to get up there. On the other hand, I would say that maybe Omiya, Kofu and Matsumoto, I think we've mentioned them as being the disappointing teams in the first six rounds. So maybe looking back later, that 7 points from the three games might not look as impressive as it does now. But you can only beat what's put in front of you, and they've done that. So it's not a knock against Machida, but just perhaps to echo what you were saying, Ben, it's still early days with 36 games to go. That's right, isn't it? So yeah, a lot could change. Yeah, a lot could change.
Indeed. Okay, so John, just a brief word on the teams who currently sit seventh and eighth. They are very much inside your sphere of influence, of course. The Yokohama FC, seventh in the table, and Tokyo Verde, eighth. What have you seen from them so far? Obviously, no need for panic where they sit in the table, and a playoff push certainly still seems on the card. No real issues at the moment, you wouldn't say?
No, I don't think there's any reason to panic either at Yokohama FC or Tokyo Verde. I think Yokohama have pretty much stayed at the same tempo as they had when they finished last season. Obviously, they changed manager right at the end of the season, so I think there were maybe a few question marks as to whether the Brazilian boss Tavares could keep them kind of in and around the playoffs. They've done that so far with a player like Iba, who's been mentioned before. You've always got a chance, and I think if you've got Leandro Dominguez as well, you sort of double your chances. So I think they're doing okay. If I'm free at the weekend, I might go to Mitsuzawa to watch them play against Kanazawa, so perhaps I'll have more to say about them next time. For Verde, I think they're kind of under the radar, but I get the impression that the quite wily, as I'm starting to realise, coach Lottina probably likes it that way. They haven't lost yet, including games against Jeff Matsumoto and Fukuoka. So again, come the end of the season, it might not look as impressive as it does now, but they lost a lot of important players, particularly left back and right back on the wings over the winter break. So I think maybe even maintaining this for Yokohama and Verde, maintaining the status quo from last year, no bad thing. And I'd be interested to see how they go over the next few months going into the kind of summer, sweaty summer season.
Yes, indeed. So you mentioned Verde unbeaten, John. Thanks for doing that. Yes, the three teams left yet to be defeated, Okayama, Machida and Tokyo Verde, while Matsumoto are the only team yet to win this season. Okay, Stuart, I believe the floor is yours. FC Gifu, it's a party time after a 3-1 away win over Ehime on Sunday, and Gifu sit joint 13th with an identical record in every regard with Omiya after six games. So that must have been fantastic on Sunday.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a strange season so far, because in the previous away game, we won 3-2 at Jeff United as well. So we scored 3 goals away from home twice this year, which is pretty good. But yeah, we're yet to win at home. It was really good. The team played really well, and the two wingers, Furuhashi on the left, Tanaka, Paolo Junichi on the right, who's got a hat trick, were kind of too hot to handle for Ehime. I'll speak a little bit about Ehime in a couple of minutes, but just this year is a bit different for Gifu. Obviously, they lost Cicinho and Shoji in the winter. They also lost Yuki Omoto on the right as well, who went to Tokushima. And so, like, the system's the same, but the players, with all due respect, who've come in to replace the other players are not as good. But they seem a little bit more solid, not super solid, because they're still kind of prone to ship goals, almost Tochigi style. But at the same time, they're starting to gel a little bit, and they're better away from home. They seem to be a side that's set up to play better away from home, because of the pace down the sides. One thing I will mention is the new forward that we've got, Ryan de Vries, the New Zealand, I think he's classed as a former international, but he's only 26. I mean, I don't think that door's closed. But he's been a good addition for Gifu, because he's a true centre forward and he occupies defenders. In the past, we've had like players who like to drop off, like Yamagishi and Koya Kazama and some other players as well. But de Vries is an actual forward who commands the attention of centre-backs, which kind of leaves the opposition full-backs or wing-backs exposed to our wingers, and one-on-one, our wingers are pretty damn good. So, it was a good counter-attacking performance, and, a welcome win ahead of this weekend's game against Corfu. So, but what I will say about Ehime is that I know they won at Niigata the previous week, but they've looked pretty awful so far this year. Their coach is under a lot of pressure, I think. It looks as though he's feeling the strain as well. They don't look a particularly good side. They lost a couple of players in the winter. I know they brought in Okamoto, the goalkeeper, from Jeff on loan, but it could be a long season for Ehime, I feel. And they're only above the Shikoku neighbours, Kamatamari Sanaki, on goal difference, because they've conceded one less. And Kamatamari Sanaki, sorry to go off on a little bit of a tangent, but that's another club that there's something wrong there. The coach this week, they were beaten at home by Oita, and you know, you can accept losing, but when the opposition scores a free kick from 60 yards out, like, those kind of things only seem to happen when you're having a bad time of things. And there's a lot of friction not in the club per se, but between the football side of the club and the money side of the club. The pitch at the Picaro Stadium is terrible, and the training facilities around the stadium can't be used for some reason. And they were training in like a futsal court this week because they couldn't find anywhere. Somewhat unbelievably, they couldn't find anywhere in the city of Takamatsu to train outside. And after the game, Nishino, the coach, kind of called out kind of everyone, really. Like, they're saying, he said that this club hasn't improved in the 9 years that he's been there. They want to become a respected J-League club, but they're not getting the backing that they need. The attendances haven't been good. In fact, I think they've become less and less in the time that they've been in the J-League. And so between those two teams, Ehime and Kamatamari Sanaki, there's some problems, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were kind of down there towards the end of the season as well. Yeah. Sorry to put a downer on it, but yeah.
No, well, yeah, we did need to move down towards the foot of the table. It's good to see Gifu not down there, Stuart. Obviously, yes, the big win away at Ehime had a lot to do with that. Now, does he have a bit of a nickname or something, this Paolo Junichi Tanaka? Because it doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
Well, we all call him Paolo.
Okay. All right, well...
That's a bit dry, isn't it? But yeah, he's Japanese, but I think his parents were, his father liked Brazilian football and wanted to give him a kind of Brazilian sounding name, so they gave him Paolo. So yeah, I thought it was half Brazilian at first, but he's not, he's fully Japanese, so yeah.
All right, fair enough. Well, we have mentioned quite a lot of the teams currently down in the bottom half of the table. Obviously, Kofu already, Matsumoto, and, yeah, Stuart's just mentioned Ehime and Sanuki, and poor old Kyoto Sanga, UK Ultra on Twitter, his Sanga boys down in 19th after six games and certainly not pulling up any trees. John, I didn't want to get your thoughts on a couple of teams who have had a really good week or so, teams who made a really difficult start to the season and now suddenly find themselves slightly more comfortable, and they are Chiba and Tochigi. Of course, Chiba in the playoffs last season, but no wins in their first four this season before returning on the style against admittedly bottom club Sanuki, smashing them 6-1 at home on Wednesday, and then following that up with a win against Kyoto Sanga UK Ultra, his boys... At Fukuari, a 2-0 home win for Jeff, which has seen them rise from 21st up to 12th, just those two wins, which obviously can happen so early in the season. And Tochigi, who were smashed, of course, in their first three games that saw them bottom, they have followed that up with two wins and a draw and have edged their way up to 15th. So any thoughts on those two clubs? I imagine you would have some on Chiba especially.
Yeah, well, there's never a dull moment, you know, when you keep an eye out for Jeff United results. But I think
Stuart's mentioned that Gifu have won there already this season. So yeah, that's another wrinkle.
Yes. I think Juan Schneider, the Argentine coach, was probably sort of leading the sack race after four games. But I think now perhaps Matsumoto Matsumoto has taken over. But yeah, there's this incredible stats that came out that from the first four games, Jeff played 81% of the game time with either a man sent off or the coach sent off, because they lost a player. They had a red card after 10 minutes in round one. Schneider was sent off the touchline in round two, and then they had another straight red in round three. So. Once they managed to keep 11 players on the pitch for more than the first 50 minutes, they got better results. But I think obviously this is why I think when Stuart and I get together, why we enjoy J2 a lot of the time is just because the quality of the coaching makes a huge difference to the what the teams look like. It's not like the Premier League or other leagues where you can go and buy players to play the way you want. It's about coaching. And I think, yeah, sometimes which manager they have or what formation they try or even which players they bring in, it's just something that makes them self-destruct at the crucial moments. But obviously they hammered Sanuki and then sort of cruised past Kyoto. So two home wins in the space of 5 days, I think very welcome. But I think the way that Schneider likes to play, I think in pre-season, he tried a few games with a back three, and I saw them play with a back three at home against Kashiwa in the kind of annual Chibigin Cup, the pre-season match, which is played every February between the two teams from Chiba. And that the back three, he likes to play with a very high line. If you take a screenshot of their back line during a game on TV, they're often on the halfway line or close to, and yeah, it doesn't work very well. Actually, playing against a player like Junito, who was chief tormentor that day for Cash, doesn't go very well. They often play with four at the back now, but still a very high line. I think it'd be okay at home playing that, but I'm concerned that they're going to struggle as they have done on the road. And I know they're away at Oita this weekend. Oita have started well and look good. They have a sort of fox in the box type player in Yusuke Goto. He's not the kind of player you really want to have your flat back four on the halfway line against. So they really have to demonstrate, or particularly Wanne Schneider has to demonstrate, they can get good results away from Fukuhari as well when they don't have, you know, 80% of the possession, numerous chances. So, I think the jury's out on that one. I've got a bit of a question mark about Jeff. For Tochigi, watching the highlights of their first couple of games, I don't know if Stuart can maybe confirm this. I was literally angry with the defending when I watched the highlights of Tochigi games early on in the season. It's nothing. I'm not a Tochigi fan. I don't know affiliation. It's just anger on behalf of anyone who is a Tochigi fan at watching this rubbish. But hopefully it's done them good. I think sometimes maybe a few savage beatings at the start of a long season can actually. That can be better than any coach telling the players that they have to do better. It's a demonstration of where they need to improve and where the problems are. And I think they've responded after an awful start. The credit to the players. They've had clean sheets against Saniki and Kumamoto after sort of letting in goals all over the shop. And I mean, it's all about mistakes, isn't it, in J2? If you can minimise the mistakes that you make, especially at the back, then you're going to get up the table. So, I think they'll probably... I had them as dead certs for relegation after two or three games, but I think now they've been able to respond to what J2 is asking of them a bit better. I think they probably will just be okay, I think.
All right, and before we wrap things up, Stuart, there's one more team I would like to mention, because we usually do mention them, and we have some regular correspondents who are fans of Avispa Fukuoka, whose season so far has been very, very FC Tokyo-like. The definition of middling, 11th in the table, so the very bottom of the top half of the table. 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses, 7 goals scored, 7 goals allowed. A goal difference of 0. That's pretty much FC Tokyo to a T. Fukuoka, I certainly hope that they can shake out of that funk fairly sharpish. Some brief thoughts on Avispa, Stuart?
Yeah, consistency is the key, right? Conceding just as many goals as you score. No, the thing is about Fukuoka, they've got some good individual talent in that side. I think Dudu will be good in this league, I think. But I think he needs some help. I'm not convinced with his strike partner, Matsuda. Is it Matsuda Ricky? Yeah, that's it. No. He needs some help up front, I think. And I think if he gets that kind of help, Avispa, they can be a pretty good side. I know they... it looked like they were... I only watched the highlights of their game at Olmia, but it looked like they were pretty convincingly beaten, even though the score was 2-1. They beat Gifu in the first game of the season when they looked half decent, and I think they've got they'll have a good defence. I think Keisuke Iwashita, even though a lot of people think he's, I'm trying to think of a nice word here, he's one of the players you'd love to hate, shall we say. I think he's a good defender and he gets them organised. I think there's pressure on Masami Ihara this season, though. Obviously, they lost, quote-unquote, lost in the playoff final last year by not beating Nagoya. I think there'll be some pressure on him to kind of formulate a promotion push. I think they will do, but I think they need to kind of sort out who's going to kind of play with Dudu up front. And the Brazilian they brought in, I think, Tulio de Melo, I think who it is. I think the jury is still out on him at the moment. So, so far.
All right, then. So, Jess, just about time to wrap it up. I do have a quick quiz question for both of you, though, before we depart. And we know that 6 games out of 42 is a far too small a sample size to make any judgments, for anybody to be panicking, etc., etc. But my quiz question relates to the teams that have sat in the top 6 after six games in the past three seasons. Now, I'll let you know that in 2015 and 2016, three of the teams who were inside the top six after six games made the playoffs, and in both seasons, the eventual champions were seventh in the table, Omiya and then Sapporo in 2016. They both sat outside the top six after six games. But last season, I'll go to you first, John. How many of last season's top six after six games made the final top six at the end of the season?
Two.
Okay, Stuart, what's your answer?
One.
Okay, well, you're both miles off. There were five of last season's top six were inside the top six after six games. Verdy, Nagoya, Nagasaki, Shonan, Tokushima, who were fifth and ended up seventh, so they almost squeaked in, of course. They only fell out on the last day of the season. And Fukuoka were last season's top six after six games. And you can go all the way down. Yokohama FC, Matsumoto, Oita, and Chiba were the next four teams, down to 10th in the table. So there was very little movement from that sort of point in time. Obviously, musical chairs with teams going up and down and in and out of the playoff places. But last season, at least, was it seems to be an outlier in the last three seasons. But, yeah, interesting and probably not predictive at all of this season. But, you know, it means that supporters of teams like Okayama, Machida, Mito and Yamaguchi can have faith that they might be able to stick around, guys.
You know, just when we thought we got away from the prediction embarrassment, he goes and springs a quiz on us, Stuart. I don't know.
Did you just think of that question just for the plain purposes of making a...
Well, John did throw that dig in about the Australian cricket team at the start, so I had to kind of get his voice back somehow.
Yeah, that's true. I think he's got like a flow chart. You know, if the guests behave, they get like route A to the finish. Then we must have got angry Ben.
that's quite amazing though. Like I would never have guessed. I literally didn't guess, but like yeah, that's quite the stat that. With the lack of mobility in and out of the top six after from the seventh game onwards, that's yeah.
Well, yeah.
Why don't we predict how many of the top six after six games will still be there? You know,
at the end of the season.
At the end.
Yeah. All right, Okayama, Machida, Mito, Yamaguchi, Oita, and Niigata. How many of those will be in the top six at the end of 42 games, Stuart?
John,
man, don't worry. Nobody listens to this. You'll be all right.
Well, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, none of those teams were in my original top six prediction for the which I only did like 5 weeks ago.
It's not the question. You're not answering the question that was asked.
God, I'd be surprised if there's more than one. I'd be surprised, like from this top six.
Yeah.
I would probably say it would either be Oita or Okayama, I think.
All right.
I'm not sold on Niigata so far. Like they might get better, but like not a lot fills me with confidence about them. I don't particularly like watching them so far. So I think either Oita or Okayama would have the best chance of staying in there, I think.
All right, what do you reckon, John?
I similarly think one or two, and I think Oita looked the most handily placed. But maybe it could be Machida's year. You know, they just missed out on the playoffs last time, and they're going well. So yeah, why not? I'll say maybe Machida could do. But I, if it's five of this top six, then I'm going to have to resign. You know.
Well, I mean, there are a couple of yo-yos here, aren't there? I mean, Okayama finished seventh. Sixth, and Machida seventh in 2016. They both slipped down the table fairly disastrously last season. But yes, as we know, there is a history, see Nagasaki, of course, of teams doing well, slipping down the table and then shooting back up. So that's certainly a possibility for both of those two who currently sit in the top two spots in the table, of course. All right, it's just about time to wrap it up because I'm not sure how close we are to using up all of our 18 megabytes available for this week's podcast. So before we let you both go, pick out a couple of games to look forward to in match day 7, which is coming up, starting this Saturday, but for the most part will be played on Sunday. And if you want to cast your net a little bit further forward, any other games that loom on the horizon that particularly pique your interest? So let's see, John, what's the pick of the games for this week for you?
I obviously have the usual tedious Canto bias with these picks, but the three games that I would be will be interested in probably Matsumoto versus Omiya, as Stuart coined it, the disappointment derby, 1 p.m. on Sunday, and then Mito against Machida, as we mentioned, third against second, should be a good one at 2 p.m. Keis Denki, and we didn't mention Tokushima at all, I don't think, during the pod, but just briefly, they're hosting Verdy, so it's a battle of the Spanish managers, and it'd be interesting to see how they get on. That's at 2 p.m. on Sunday as well, Tokushima against Tokyo Verdy.
Yes, that's ninth hosting eighth, so another good-looking game on paper. Stuart, a couple of games that have got your juices flowing for the weekend, and as I said, if there's anything else that you see on the horizon?
Well, I think there's no doubt the big game is on Sunday in Gifu when Gifu take on Corfu. I think we take that as red anyway. So what I will do is, like, it's a bit under the radar even for J2, but Kumamoto hosting Niigata. And the reason I say that is because at home, Kumamoto have beaten Tokushima and Omiya so far, and they've come from behind in both of those games to win. And it's going down to Kumamoto is not an easy out these days for teams. And yeah, I've just spent the last kind of 5 minutes slugging Niigata off, but I think it'll be a difficult game for them, and I think it'll be it'll show their mettle, so to speak. I think on the horizon, I'm looking forward to when Gifu host Tokushima, because we get to welcome Cicinho back. When's that? April 15th, so that's a couple of weeks away. But aside from that, there was one game that took my fancy the following week. I think, that was it. It was Yamaguchi hosting Omiya. I think that'll be a really good game coming up. I think, when's that on? April 7th, I think, a week on Saturday. But that'll be a really good, entertaining game, I feel. So, yeah, coming up soon.
All right, terrific stuff. Any other business before I let you go, gentlemen? John, let us know your Twitter handle, anything you have to plug, and, any other business before we bid you farewell?
Sure. Nothing special in the pipeline, but as usual, at J2CantoBytes on Twitter is where I tweet. These days, family commitments, take precedence, but I tweet as much as I can. So please follow me on Twitter if you're using that service.
All right, and same to you, Stuart, before we let you go.
Yeah, obviously the blog is still up and running. You can contact me at sushi_football. From time to time, John guests on my blog. I'm hopefully, work's a bit busy at the moment, but hopefully I'm trying to get a few other people to, a few of the members of the J2 community to contribute things to the site. But if you have any kind of, if you want to talk J2, come on in. It's all good.
All right, terrific stuff. It's been fantastic to have you both on the podcast again, and particularly together. I'm sure the listeners will have really appreciated hearing your thoughts, both of your thoughts on J2 through the first six games of the season. So, Stuart, thank you very much for your time again, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, not a problem. I really enjoyed it. I look forward to speaking again soon, yeah.
Terrific stuff. And, John, great to catch up with you again. And, same with Stuart. Hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, no problems. Thanks as ever, Ben, and hope everyone enjoys the pod and the football coming up. Cheers.
All right, terrific stuff. My thanks again to John Steele and Stuart Smith, and, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. If you tuned in this week hoping for some Japan national team chat, sorry to disappoint you, but if you watched the game against Mali, you probably understand why we haven't bothered, although well done to Shoya Nakajima for his first full Japan goal. We'll be back next week with perhaps a little bit of international talk and a review of the weekend's J1 action. Speak to you again then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast.